Major Ince, Reel 1. How and when did you come to be in the Army, please?
I really went into the Army, I suppose I was brought up with the Army in mind, and so when I was at school I decided I would try for Sandhurst, and I went to Sandhurst in 1936 and left in 1938.
What were you doing when war broke out?
I had joined my regiment from Sandhurst in January 1939, and we prepared, of course, immediately. Well, the situation was anyway in the country that we were sort of thinking about war, I suppose, ever since the Munich crisis in 1938. But we were all prepared, and we in fact embarked to go to France with the BEF, I think it was on the 17th of September 1939.
How had you reacted when you heard the news that we had declared war on Germany?
I think intense excitement, actually. I was... I did, funnily enough, the same job that my father did in 1914. I took the colours from the 1st Battalion, the Duke of Wellington's regiment, from Borden up to Halifax, to the depot. And I was at the depot, in fact, when war was declared on the 3rd of September, and heard... heard it on the radio at the time.
Was there no sense of dismay?
I don't think there was any sense of dismay, no, at all. I think it was quite expected, in fact. And, of course, the troops were already being mobilised, and they were all coming into the barracks, you know, and there was a great feeling of exhilaration, I think, in many ways, amongst the reservists being coming in and that sort of thing. I can remember a tremendous sort of atmosphere. Everybody's singing, and there it was, you know. And then I took a big draft down from Halifax to the battalion at Borden to bring them up to strength, and as I say, off we went to France on the 17th of September.
Can you say what your opinion of the quality of the battalion was at that time?
Oh, we were very lucky, because all the reservists were chaps who'd been in the army for 7 years. And they were still doing their 5 years reserve service, so they were recent soldiers, and a very, very good lot they were too. And as you'll probably understand, as they were all Yorkshiremen.
Where did you go to in France?
We went to a funny little place called Saint-le-Guillaume, somewhere in Normandy, I suppose it would be. Yeah.
Which division were you part of?
The 1st Division. And we were the 3rd Brigade, I think it was. Mm.
Did you stay in Normandy?
We then went... No, that was really the sort of area where we went to organise ourselves, having got to France. We then moved up to near the Lille area, and forward of Lille onto the Belgian frontier. And that's where our main position was, until we were moved down to the Saar in, I think it was December 1939, as a sort of separate force altogether. We went relieved some French troops down there, forward of the Maginot Line.
What kind of work was the unit doing in the Saarland?
Well, we dug ourselves in there, and we were patrolling across into the German side of the border at night and that sort of thing, mainly. I mean, nothing very much actually happened while we were there at all.
What kind of terrain was it?
Not hilly, very hilly, but, you know, hills that you could put a defensive position on. We were in front of the Maginot Line, of course, and we had the Maginot Line behind us.
Did you ever see any Germans?
I don't think I ever actually saw any, no. They were very far scarce, really.
Were there any shots fired?
I don't think so, no. Not at that stage.
Was there any sense that both sides were trying to damp things down and keep things quiet?
I think it was, as you know, it was called the phony war at the time. And it certainly was a phony war, because there we were sitting opposite one another, really, and doing nothing. And, of course, nothing did happen until Hitler finally did something in the spring.
Were these just recce patrols?
Recce patrols, really, yes, and just sort of making sure that the Germans weren't infiltrating to us, really. I suppose that was the object of them.
Were any ambushes or booby traps?
No, I don't think so, no. I don't recollect all that being done. It may have been done without me knowing. I was only a young second lieutenant, I think, in those days. So.
What was your job in the battalion?
I was second in command of a rifle company in the battalion at the time. And, of course, we had various reserve officers with us as well.
Do you remember which company it was?
C Company, I think.
Were they mostly West Riding men?
Oh, yes, they were all West Riding men, yes. Absolutely all of them. Very good lot indeed.
What kind of jobs had they come from in Silistris?
Mostly working in the mills, I think, in Yorkshire, you know, woolen mills and that sort of thing. Quite a lot round Halifax and Bradford, of course, around that sort of area. Which is where they all came from.
Did you have much contact with the French army?
Very little at that stage, I think. No, not really, except we did do one or two tours around the Maginot Line, and of course the French were manning that, and one did see them then, but apart from that, no. No, the only thing I can really remember was the King George VI, visiting us down in the Saar. In fact, it was the day before I got appendicitis, so I remember it quite well.
What impression did the French army make on you as a fighting unit?
I think we thought they weren't awfully a viable force, I think, really. I think that was the impression one got at the time. I think they were relying on the Maginot Line to stop everything. And, of course, it wasn't going to, because it was... They got past it, the Germans. I mean, they didn't need to attack the Maginot Line.
What specifically was it about the French that gave you that impression?
Well, I think they were being a bit idle about it, put it that way, you know, thinking the Maginot Line was a be all and end all thing.
Did they imagine...
In that part I'm talking about now, I don't say that was necessarily the case elsewhere, but...
Did the Maginot Line impress you?
I suppose it did at the time. It was a marvellous thing underground. I mean, they had every mortal thing. I mean, the actual living areas and all that sort of thing, and all the supplies and all that were all there already. But no, it was a. But of course, as I say, it was. It ended. When you a bit further north, and there was no. Because obviously no one was going to attack it when they could go around the north end of it.
Were you personally aware of that before the German attack?
Oh, I think we knew the Maginot Line didn't go further north, yes, because all the British, the BEF were all further north, you see, they were sort of around the Belgian part of the frontier.
What reception did you get from French civilians?
Oh, very good indeed. Absolutely excellent. Oh, they were very good, always wanting to help us and provide vegetables and things like that. Because what people probably don't realise is that the basic sort of ration of the British Army in those days was bully beef and biscuits. And the rest of the stuff, like fresh vegetables and things, you had to really sort of get hold of locally. And, of course, there were a lot of farming areas where, in fact, I remember being billeted on a farm, and of course one had plentiful supplies. They used to give it. I mean, they'd happy to help you, you know.
How did the soldiers behave in relation to the French civilians?
Oh, very good indeed, I think. Yes, I got on very well with them, yeah. Oh, yes. And of course, during this phony war, I mean, the French entertained them quite a lot, you know, and that sort of thing, and by inviting them into their houses. And oh, no, I think they quite enjoyed life, you know, really.
You mean inviting them in for meals?
Oh, yes, yes, oh, yes, very much so.
So you didn't have to punish any of the soldiers for misbehaviour?
I don't remember. I suppose it's the odd case of drunkenness, I suppose, but I can't remember anything very vital.
What happened when the Germans attacked?
Well, I wasn't there when they attacked. It's very difficult to tell you that. I mean, by that time I had appendicitis and eventually got back to England by, I think it was February, I think, of 1940. So I wasn't there when all that happened.
Where were you treated?
I was treated. I had my appendix out in the French military hospital in Metz, and it was quite interesting actually, because the British medical authorities sent down a surgeon and an anaesthetist from the BEF down to the French hospital in Metz to operate on me, and it was treated as a teaching operation, and it was done in a teaching theatre, operating theatre, where there were about 30 students watching, and apparently it was a new method of doing it, and I think the French were quite impressed with it all, because in those days you stayed in bed after an operation for about 3 weeks, whereas the anaesthetist and the surgeon had me up the next day, and I was out in the town with them having a drink in 3 days. So that rather shook the French, who thought I ought to be in bed.
So you were a guinea pig?
I think I was. Not a guinea pig, but I think as far as the French were concerned, I was, yes. But, anyhow, it was all very good. And I then got moved from there up to the British Military Hospital in Dieppe, which was in the old casino at Dieppe.
So you joined up again with the unit after all the fighting?
No, I didn't, actually, funnily enough. I thought I was going to. And one day the director of medical services of the whole British Army arrived to inspect the hospital. And he came to me and he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm just convalescing from appendix." And he said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Nothing, actually." He said, turned around to the CEO of the hospital, and he said, "Put him on the boat to England tonight." And that was that. And I was on the boat to England that night. And he said, "I don't want officers wasting their time here," which is what I was doing. I mean, and I came back to England. And I was then at Basingstoke for a week or two, and before reporting to Halifax for duty again.
Were you in any of the bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
In the summer of 1940, when the Battle of Britain started, I was then, had been actually seconded to a battalion of the South Staffordshire Regiment, which was being formed for, really, basically defending the shores of England. And I was in Norfolk for a bit at around King's Lynn area, and then we moved down to around the Lulworth area, and I certainly saw quite a lot of the, I didn't so much get bombed, but I saw quite a lot of the dogfights going on in the air when we were down there. It was only, I think, later on in the war that I actually came across bombing at all, because it was more when they were bombing London, you know, later on in the war, in 1943, I suppose, that sort of time, when the flying bombs and things came in, you know, and V1s and V2s. It's all a bit of that. But
what was your opinion about how national morale held up under the bombing?
Oh, marvellous, I think, really. I mean, absolutely, certainly, they were. The morale was very high, in fact. I don't think there was ever any thought of defeat, really.
Did you ever come across anybody who, as a consequence of what they had suffered under the air raids, wanted to give in or come to an agreement with Hitler?
I've never heard of that at all. No, ever. Never heard of it. I know people these days, there was a lot of talk of it going on, but I never heard of it at all. No.
Was there, do you think, during the Second World War, a sense of national unity or disunity from the social point of view, do you think?
Oh, I think very much unity, no question about it. I mean, I never found any disunity at all, anywhere. But I suppose perhaps it's partly people I met, I suppose, but I never came across it at all. Absolutely no, definitely not.
Some people have said that that sense of national unity was artificially imposed by government propaganda. Do you think that's true?
I suppose the government were careful in what they published. I'm not sure it was propaganda so much as what they didn't tell them properly. But certainly it might have been affected by that, but I certainly never ever came across any disunity about it. And there was never any thought of defeat at all, I don't think. We were going to win in the end, whatever happened.
Was there any sense that the poorer sections of the population were getting it worse than the rich, and that the rich were, or the better off, were getting away with the suffering?
I don't think I found that at all, no. I mean, in the latter part, after I'd been wounded in North Africa, which no doubt we'll talk about later, I came back to England and I spent a year going around the country recruiting for the parachute regiment. And I went to every part of the country then, including Northern Ireland and everywhere. And I never, ever came across any thought of disunity or anything at all, really. I, in fact, used to go and billet myself with I had a sergeant who was with me, who was a Welshman, and when we were in Wales at all, we used to go and stay with his parents, who were miners, near Merthyr Tydfil. And I stayed with them several times, and there was no question of any disunity about the thing at all.
What about Welsh nationalism? Did you come across that?
Not at that time, I don't think. No. I think that something's rather happened since.
Did you personally think that the Germans would invade during the summer of 1914?
Oh, I think we really did think it was coming then, I think, yes. Certainly in about the time of sort of July, I suppose, June, July, yes, that sort of time, 1940. We were certainly prepared for it happening then. I think we were quite surprised it didn't happen. Of course, there were several false alarms when one thought it had happened. Suddenly the church bells started ringing or something, you know, which was the signal that... particularly in East Anglia, I think, people were a bit jittery about it.
Whereabouts in Norfolk were you?
Well, I think more around the sort of Hunstanton area, that sort of area. I think town headquarters was in King's Lynn, in fact, but we had companies out, and also we got involved a bit in protecting the Sandringham area, because it was just outside there, and quite interesting that. Because there were large open spaces there, and they were worried about gliders landing on them. And I remember that we said that they've got to put some obstacles, and I met the estate manager saying, "Oh, the king won't agree to that." That sort of thing. I happened to get involved in this, and I remember them saying, "I'm sure he will if you explain it to him properly." And they did have to go and explain it to him, and he said, "Of course, but whatever's necessary."
How did you come to be a member of the parachute regiment?
The autumn, anyway, of 1940, I was down in, by that time, Lulworth Cove area, and one was getting a bit bored with the business of sitting looking out to sea, and a signal arrived in the battalion asking for volunteers for special duties, and... So I thought, well, no harm in volunteering, see what it is. And in about 3 days' time after that, a colonel arrived and said, explained what it was all about, and would I like to volunteer, and still volunteer, and I said, yes, I would. And within a week, I'd done the first parachute jump, I think. up at Ringway, which is Manchester Airport, of course, today, we used to jump into Tatton Park, which is... Now, National Trust property, I think.
How frightening was the parachute training?
Oh, I don't think it was frightening. I mean, it was. At that age, one had a sort of buzz, you know, and we were all doing the same thing. And it was something one wanted to do, I think. I think I don't think one was frightened. I was far more frightened doing my second jump, I think.
Did you have any problems coping with the parachute course of training?
No, not at all, no. I was reasonably fit, I think. And, in those days, of course, it wasn't as tough as it is today, I don't think, in fact. Because one did everything much quicker. In the old days, you didn't have the same pre-training that went on like they do now. I mean, as I say, I did my first jump within a week of volunteering. We were taught how to fall and that sort of thing. That was really about it.
How keen were the members of the regiment to get into action?
Oh, very. And very upset when they didn't get going rather quickly, you know, I think. But 1942, I remember, we all thought we were going to action. We prepared for various raids to go and do on the continent, and they nearly all got called off. In fact, about the only one that ever happened was Brunewald, I think. But that was the second parachute turn. I was the first parachute turn, and we did get actually airborne on one or two occasions, and things were aborted while we were in the air. We were going to do a raid, I remember, on Ushant, and that never came off. We got halfway there and we turned back. All very upsetting when that happens, as you can imagine. And of course there was a raid in early 41, I think it was, into southern Italy on the Trentino Viaduct, aqueduct, I think it was. And that was just a small raid, and of course they were all taken prisoner. And most of them got back again afterwards, all right.
How did you eventually go abroad yourself?
Went with the first parachute turn, as it was then, to the to the North African campaign in Tunisia when we invaded Tunisia in November 1942.
Can you give me the details of what you remember about?
Yes,
that operation,
we
please?
Went out to by sea. The Americans had landed, I think, earlier on in around the Algiers area, and we went into port in Algiers and disembarked, marched out to the airport at Algiers, which is called Maison Blanche, and we went straight out there, where we were met by Dakotas, American Dakotas, ready to go and drop us up in Tunisia. We actually dropped as if you were dropping on Salisbury Plain, in fact, and the French, Free French, were on the ground and helped considerably in providing transport and that sort of thing. And then we moved forward towards Tunis. I, in fact, at this stage was commanding headquarter company and did not, in fact, take part in any of the actions up there at that stage. So I didn't really. It was only later on when they relieved the parachute turns and they moved back to Algiers, and they then did a second sortie up into Tunisia in February 1943, and that's when I went up and I was commanding a company on that assault, and got unfortunately wounded rather early on in it. And I suppose I can say it's unfortunately, but probably quite fortunate in the end.
Which company were you in charge of then?
I was in command of, I think it was S Company, of the first parachute turn. I think it was S Company. And we did a night attack on a hill called Jebel Mansour, which part of the main range of mountains just southwest of Tunisia, really. Southwest of Tunis. And we did a night attack on that and captured it from a German panzer battalion. And sat on it for two or three days, and then they counterattacked it, and we got pushed off it by them. And I got wounded during the sort of push during the counterattack.
How was the attack deployed?
What, our attack?
Yes.
Well, it was deployed as a night attack, and of course you have a start line, and you got across that start line at a particular time, and you're supported with by artillery, of course, the artillery, I think, knocked them out fairly well, and we got up on the hill, and they soon gave in. In fact, once we were up there, the Germans.
Did you know which?
Did we know what?
Which unit you were attacking?
We knew it was a Panzer Battalion, yes. But the extraordinary thing was that after the attack had sort of consolidated, and we'd taken the prisoners and they were sitting down, you know, sort of more or less sitting down, the troops had no enmity whatever against the Germans. They sat down, I can see it now, and were showing photographs of their girlfriends to one another, or wives, or whatever it may be. Quite extraordinary. And then, of course, prisoners disappeared, and that was that.
Did you personally feel any enmity?
I don't think I did, no. Don't think so.
Why do you think the soldiers felt like that?
Well, I think they always do. I mean, they just feel it as they're another soldiers, and it's one of those things that they happen to be fighting them. I think it's been proved all the way along, actually, in recent wars, that that is so. You don't seem to find it. I there's no actual hate there, put it that way.
How did you feel the Germans fought on Jebel Mansour?
They're a tough lot, there's no doubt about that. And I think it's always been said that the German soldiers led by British officers would be very good. I think that's where they fail, probably, with their officers.
Did you take many casualties to your unit?
Quite a few, actually. Yes, not in the actual night attack, but when the counter attack and the bombardment before it. That's when it all happened, I think. Really, I was very lucky. I got wounded in the legs. Some chap found me and put me on the back of a mule. Mules seemed to know its way home, so.
What was the method of the German counterattack?
It was a bombardment, and Stuka dive bombing us. That's a frightening experience, I can tell you. They feel they're absolutely coming straight at you, and then they pull out, of course, at the last minute. But it was more the screaming. They had these sort of screamers on the aircraft that made a terrible noise. It was a very frightening business, but I don't think actually they caused many casualties. In fact, I think it was more trying to lower your morale. But,
what exactly happened when you were wounded?
Well, I was wounded in the legs, actually, so I was physically all right up here, so I managed to crawl into a. I was in a trench at the time when I got wounded, but I was able to crawl to behind the hill, and chap in the company who was there had some mules there who had been supplying the battalion.